KPBS On Demand is supported by Marichal Design and Remodeling, helping homeowners with their home remodeling needs. From ADUs to kitchen remodels, room additions, and custom homes, Marichal Design and Remodeling can help homeowners design and build their dream homes. More at trustyourhometous.com.
Good morning, I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. It's Tuesday, September 2nd. What change would a new congressional district map bring? More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. You'll now pay more to park downtown when there's a big event. Yesterday, rates went up for parking meters within a half mile of Petco Park when there's a baseball game or other major events that draws more than 10,000 people. Meter rates within the zone will increase to $10 2 hours before and 4 hours after the start of an event. So, for example, if you're downtown and within half a mile of Petco for an event that starts at 7 p.m., special event parking rates will be in effect starting 5 p.m. until 11 p.m. Vehicles with a disabled placard or license plate will continue to still be able to park at meters for free, even within the new special event zone. The Oceanside Historical Society opened its new location this past weekend. Their first home was the original police station in Oceanside, where they were located for almost 30 years. Thomas Weiss bought a new building for the Historical Society, giving them a permanent home and a new name, the Robert A. and Bessie J. Weiss Oceanside History Center. The center features 3,000 square feet of space and a large exhibit room showcasing the history of Oceanside from the 1880s to the 1980s. The center is on Civic Center Drive in downtown Oceanside. It's open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10 to 2 and is free to the public. And hey, maybe some current history being made in Oceanside is more your speed. If so, the U.S. Open Adaptive Surfing Championships are being held on the north side of the Oceanside Pier from Thursday through Sunday. It attracts adaptive surfers from all over the world. Every year you can watch the action from the sand, but new this year, you can hang 10 from your couch and stream the competition on the High Five Foundation and Stoke for Life's social media pages. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team, and we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.
A new congressional district map is going before voters this fall. Reporter Jay Gatta took a look at how San Diego's five congressional seats could change if the map is approved.
Voters will decide if California gets a new congressional map ahead of the midterm elections. Governor Newsom said it's in response to Texas redrawing its map. Here's what it would mean in San Diego. If you live in East County, you're probably in California's 48th district, represented by Darrell Issa. Newsom wants to flip Issa's district to Democrats by carving out big parts of it and putting those parts in other districts represented by Democrats, which means the balance of voters would change a lot. Right now, the 48th has 14% more registered Republican voters than Democrats. In the new map, it would be plus 10 in favor of Democrats. But the 50th district would go from 16% more Democrats to just a 4% advantage, basically a toss-up, because you can't just make voters disappear. If you take them out of the 48th, they have to go somewhere. Here's what Congressman Scott Peters, who represents the 50th, said about that.
I like the district I have. It's tremendous, but I'm willing to be a team player, and I've represented Poway before. I could do it again.
It's way too early to make predictions for 2026, but based on where you live, your vote could decide who controls Congress for the next 2 years.
That was reporter Jake Gatta. Moving the construction industry into the future is the goal of some new coursework at San Diego State. SciTech reporter Thomas Fudge tells us about the effort to make advanced technology an integral part of construction work.
Construction work is changing. Artificial intelligence and robotics are already in play, and San Diego State just got a $4.5 million grant to train people to find ways that technology can make construction more productive and efficient. Reza Akhavian is a professor of engineering at San Diego State, and he's the lead researcher for the National Science Foundation grant. He says technology advances are on the horizon.
We envision a future of work where robots can lay bricks, for example, or robots can help with overhead installations and things of that nature.
He says one problem technology could help solve is low productivity. Construction lags behind manufacturing and the general economy in its growth of productivity. Thomas Fudge, KPBS News.
Recent reports show enlisted personnel and veterans struggle financially when transitioning out of service. Military and Veterans reporter Andrew Dyer spoke to one veteran about her experience.
When an injury forced Jaquetta Edwards out of the Navy last year, she thought she was in pretty good shape. The 10-year veteran owned the San Diego home where she, her mother, and five nieces and nephews lived. She planned to go back to school for electrical engineering, the same thing she'd been doing on Navy ships.
I had saved, like, a good amount of money. And when I first got out, I was like, oh, this should last me until, you know, my money kicks in and I start going to school and they start paying me to go to school and stuff like that. That's pretty much what I thought was going to happen. It did not happen that way.
Edwards is like a lot of transitioning service members. Recent Pentagon survey data shows only a third of the junior enlisted ranks feel financially stable. Across the whole military and reserves, 35% have less than 3 months' living expenses saved. Edwards says there's also something about military culture that makes people hesitant to ask for help.
Because the military kind of makes you feel like if you depend on someone else, you're weak. So everything that you have, you do it for yourself because that's what the military kind of taught you. You don't take no handouts.
4 years ago, she took in her sister's five children. Earlier this year, about 6 months after leaving the Navy, Edwards found herself in crisis and behind on her mortgage.
I said, if I don't pay this bill, like, we're going to be homeless. Like, if I don't pay this, I have too many kids to be homeless.
That's when she connected with the Support the Enlisted Project, or STEP. CEO Tony Teravainen co-founded the nonprofit in San Diego back in 2012 to help enlisted troops and transitioning veterans. Since then, it's helped thousands of military families, and it's prevented more than 500 evictions.
You know, our program restores hope, it changes lives, and it does this permanently for these families that we affect.
He says besides providing food and financial grants, the real lasting help comes from the financial wellness training they provide.
At the same time they're hearing about how they can achieve permanent financial wellness, they're getting this temporary relief and they can start to create that association for themselves or their friends.
The nonprofit began helping local San Diego military families, but over time they heard from families across the country.
I think last year we served about 120 families in 39 other states. So as the families contact us passively, you know, if we have the bandwidth to be able to take care of them, you know, there's no reason we should say no.
That's why he says the organization decided a few years ago to expand, first along the West Coast, then nationally. They've added staff and this summer purchased a new, larger warehouse that will serve as STEP's national headquarters. Teravainen says he's seen military families struggle regardless of where they're stationed.
We had 99 cases from Texas. And we're like, well, that makes sense because it's another large population. But we also had 99 cases from Alabama. But the starting point is the challenge and definitely high cost of living areas. And that transitioning when they move from one area to another area adds to the military challenge.
Edwards says as of August, things are much better.
How are you doing? I'm doing good. I just started school on the 18th. I'm taking race and ethnicity, calculus 2, and waves and mechanics. So I'm doing really well. I'm budgeting right.
She says anyone who needs a little help shouldn't feel bad about asking for it.
And there's nothing wrong with asking for help because some people really do need it. Even if you think, like I thought, like other people have more problems than I do, they're going to need the money more. But who's to say that they need the money more? Who's to say that if I didn't get this help, I wouldn't be living on the street?
STEP's national expansion is proceeding carefully. Their next location is in Hawaii. They'll be moving into their new, larger headquarters later this fall. Andrew Dyer, KPBS News.
Friday was the 55th anniversary of the Chicano Moratorium, a peaceful protest by thousands of Chicanos against the Vietnam War that people who were there say ended in violence by law enforcement. Reporter Jacob Ayer says a local museum is commemorating the moment with an art exhibition.
55 years ago, 20 to 30,000 Chicanos protested in East Los Angeles against the disproportionate death rate of Mexican Americans in the Vietnam War. Chula Vista resident Sonia Lopez says she was one of over 1,000 San Diegans at the march.
We didn't expect to be tear gassed or to run for our lives. We just ran to people's houses and stopped knocking the door because the police were moving in on us, and people were opening the doors to let you in so you wouldn't get hurt.
Hundreds were arrested and 3 people were killed, according to the Library of Congress. To honor the anniversary, Barrio Logan's Chicano Park Museum and Cultural Center is opening an exhibition called Fragmentos del Barrio. It was created by artist Ramses Noriega, who co-founded the moratorium.
It was not just anti-war, anti-police brutality movement, anti-immigration exploitation persecution movement, anti-redlining movement.
He says the movement inspired future generations of Chicanos. That exhibit is on display now through the end of February. Jacob Ayer, KPBS News.
Lucky Wong was a North Park legend, serving breakfast at his diner for nearly 50 years. He died last year, and the diner closed, leaving the community without a friend and a gathering place. Now, a family-run restaurant is taking over the space. Brian Foxworth Jr. runs Mom's Chicken and Waffles with his parents.
The old school dining look of it, that's going to stay. The seating's going to stay. We're pretty much just getting new flooring and putting some paint on the walls. We're also going to have a Lucky special. Potatoes, the bacon, and the eggs with a side of toast. So we'll keep that going for the locals and just to honor Lucky's legacy.
Foxworth's restaurant is set to open in December on North Park Way at the corner of Grimm Avenue, which has been ceremonially renamed Lucky Lane. Digital Gem Cinema kicks off its September series of film restorations tonight with the 1980 crime thriller Night of the Juggler. Cinema junkie Beth Accomando has this review.
I love that respected distributor Kino Lorber sees the value of restoring and theatrically distributing not just art house classics, but also films some might dismiss as lowbrow fodder. B-movies and grindhouse films deserve to be reclaimed from the margins and celebrated. Digital Gem Cinema embraces this diversity by programming not just Akira Kurosawa classics, but also the gritty grindhouse gem, Night of the Juggler.
You want to see your kid alive again or cut up in chunks of meat?
Shot on location in New York and capturing the mood of a city consumed by crime, this efficient exploitation flick provides a vivid time capsule. It's also irresistible genre filmmaking, with Cliff Gorman making a creepy, racist psycho more than a one-dimensional stereotype. James Brolin does more running than acting as a former cop trying to rescue his daughter. Robert Butler is a solid studio director with a ton of TV credits, ranging from the original Star Trek to Hill Street Blues. Here, he keeps the pace fast and turns an unflinching eye on the underbelly of the city to give us a gloriously quintessential New York film. Beth Accomando, KPBS News.
That is it for the pod today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. I'm Lawrence K. Jackson. Thanks for listening and subscribing. By doing so, you're supporting public media, and I want to thank you for that. Have a great day.
I'm Dr. Rachel Jans, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the San Diego Museum of Art. We're presenting a landmark exhibition of Eduardo Chiida, a visionary sculptor who transformed the way we think about form, space, and material. Eduardo Chiida, Convergence, is the most expansive U.S. presentation of the artist's work in nearly 50 years, bringing together monumental sculptures, delicate works on paper, and a virtual reality experience of his iconic Comb of the Wind installation on the Basque coast of Spain. Eduardo Chillida Convergence is on view now through February 8, 2026 at the San Diego Museum of Art in Balboa Park. Learn more at sdmaart.org.